this morning in this part of Focus 580, we'll be doing our monthly show on home maintenance. Usually we do that in the 10 o'clock hour, but always on a Monday. And our guest is Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He knows a lot about single family homes, other buildings too, but pretty much that's what we concentrate on this show, single family homes. And if you have a question, can be anything from the roof, attic, walls, windows, doors, basement, gutters, siding, you name it. If you have some kind of problem, you're not quite sure how to approach the solution, you can call in and talk with Hank, and he'll do his best to help you out. All you have to do is call us here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
We have a caller here ready and waiting, so we'll get to them. And we also have a fax question that we will deal with. So for our listener in Effingham, be assured we will get to your question. But let's take this phone question first in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning.
I have a specific question about how to repair a hole in a fiberglass tub, and then I have some general questions about fiberglass bathtubs. So I'll start with the specific. Are there compounds for covering up a hole or a break in a fiberglass tub?
Yes, there are. You need to get a repair kit for a fiberglass boat, same thing as the tub, or for Corvette motor cars, which have fiberglass bodies.
A repair kit for a fiberglass boat?
Boat or a Corvette.
And where would one get such things?
Well, most boat supply dealers would have them. Some Chevy dealers would have repair kits for Corvettes.
Okay.
But it's basically the same material.
Okay. My husband took a look at Lowe's, and they did have some that recommend, you paint it and you let it dry for a long time. But you think that the repair kit for the boats and the Corvette car are much better than what
Yes.
might be sold?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Great. Great. Thank you. That's a great tip. General questions I have about fiberglass tubs is about how long do they last before they start getting these holes?
Well, I'm not sure what kind of a hole you have. The one problem we had with some of the earlier tubs mm-hmm. were that they were not adequately supported in the bottom, and we got some cracking.
This is where it is. It's near the bottom.
Right. This usually means that the proper support wasn't installed under the tub when it was placed.
That's about 20 years old.
Okay.
Is that the area
yes.
you're talking about?
Yes. See, today we would, most of them come with more support molded into the bottom than the old ones had.
Uh-huh.
Some of the old ones, I know one set of instructions called for mixing a bag of wet plaster, dumping it on the floor, and then plunking the tub down on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when everything's set up, this provided appropriate support for the floor. Other people were using one of the plastic foam in a can type things. They were squirting a bed of foam down and setting the tub on this. It cracks because it flexes.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now, when this was installed 20 years ago, it already had a crack on the side, and we tried to paint it with ordinary paint.
Should have sent it back and refused delivery and let the factory worry about it.
I see. Okay. Does that mean we're going to have a problem down the road because of perhaps that there was not enough support under the tub?
Well, it's possible. If you can get to the space under the tub somewhere at the edge or something like this, you can squirt some plastic foam in there. Now, you have to be very careful as to you want a non-expanding foam
mm-hmm.
So that the thing doesn't try and lift it from spraying the foam underneath it. And then you can let that set, and that will stiffen the bottom considerably.
Okay. How thick are the walls of a fiberglass tub?
Oh, depends on brand and exactly where. Probably a 16th to 3/32.
Ah, so a hole, the beginning of a hole. It looks like a hole, but I know it's just a separation of the fiberglass.
Yeah.
So that could cause leaks.
It could eventually cause leaks, yes.
Okay, so it definitely has to be repaired. Okay, well, Mr. Spies, thank you so much.
Okay.
You're very welcome.
Good. Thank you. So the repair here, it involves probably some kind of paste-like compound that you...
Yeah, there's an epoxy and a... actually, it's a polyester surfacing compound that goes on, but it's epoxy-based, I think. And it will set up and so on and then can be polished back out again.
Okay, very good. Our guest here this morning on Focus 580, Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's with us each month. We talk about home maintenance. He's usually here in the 10 o'clock hour, but the right day, at least, a Monday is the day that he's on. But it's the usual sort of thing. If you have questions about some kind of home problem, you can give us a call, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Why don't we do this question from our Effingham listener. This came in by fax. And listener has a painting question. He says that he apparently has had lots of problems with paint sticking to the wood on the outside of the house. And they said this time they're going to pressure wash and try and scrape as well as possible and follow your tip about lightly sanding before going on and applying a primer. So what the listener was interested in is type of primer that you would recommend. And also he said that someone suggested they use an enamel on the outside, saying that that'll adhere better. I think your take on this is we got a moisture problem, and that's really what he's going to have to deal with.
Yes, I think so. When you're pushing paint off to that extent, it usually means excessive moisture from the inside. It may be that your house is on a crawl space and it may not have a plastic ground cover over the soil surface in the crawl space. You might be getting water in the crawl space. Usually additional evidence of this will be the fact that you get condensation on the windows in the wintertime, which means the humidity in the house is too high. The house probably does not have a vapor barrier or vapor retarder in the walls. Generally speaking, you can do this artificially with the paint on the inside. Now, the place to use the enamel is on the inside, not on the outside, because the enamel is more of a vapor barrier, and if any moisture does get in the walls, it will push the enamel paint right off on the outside. So what we're basically trying to do is to reduce the humidity in the house below the point where any condensation occurs. Then, as far as the choice of primer is concerned, use the one that is recommended for the exterior paint that you are going to use. It needs to be compatible. Yes, you can pressure wash it. Be sure that you allow several days for the wood to dry out after it's pressure washed. Then you want to lightly sand it, as you indicate, before putting new paint on. Now, that light sanding should occur within a couple of hours of the time you put the paint on. In other words, work small spots, because the sunlight causes the cells on the surface of the wood to deteriorate, and so the paint will stick to those deteriorated cells rather than the good wood underneath. So we want to get this down to good cells. Very light sanding is all that's necessary. We're only talking about a thousandth of an inch or so coming off here. And then getting the primer to bond to the freshly sanded wood. Then put on whatever paint you want, but it should not be an enamel-type paint. Probably a latex paint rather than oil-based would be preferable, simply because it is more vapor permeable, less likely to push off.
Mm-hmm. I think in past we've talked about this, that if people have peeling paint on the outside of the house, it could be one of two things. Could either be the fact that the surface prep was not good and so the paint isn't sticking, or
right.
It can also be the other thing we're talking about here, paint's being pushed off. One clue may be look at the pieces of paint that are coming off. What do they look like?
Yeah, moisture peel is usually irregular splotches all the way down to the bare wood. Now, there's another form of peeling related to alligatoring. This means you look and there's a bunch of rectangular pieces of paint wanting to come off. This is normally the result of too many coats of paint. We find this often on old houses that are probably on their 10th coat of paint or so. And there's no cure for that except taking it off the bare wood and starting over again. Because once the paint film is up to about 25 thousandths of an inch thick, you can't hold it on with glue.
Okay.
So we go from there. And then the surface prep is very important. And I would certainly use the primer recommended by the finished paint that you're going to put on, but not an enamel.
All right. Well, now the lines are full, and we'll get right back to the phones with starting out with an Urbana caller here and line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
It's another surface painting question, but this surface is a deck. The latest Consumer Reports has an update on deck treatments, and since I'm getting ready to water treat the deck, I wondered what your latest thinking is for the best product and the best preparation.
Well, decks are very difficult because, first of all, you have moisture that does come up from the ground underneath them. They're subject to water and sunlight and abrasion, and it's darn hard to keep any finish on them for more than 2 years. Are you planning to stain the deck, go to natural wood, or what?
No, simply get a clear waterproofing rather than a water, or perhaps a water repellent.
Yeah, you want water repellent, not waterproofing.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't have any data from the last couple of years. In general, one of the best brands that were found was Seal Treat 2. And I don't know where you buy this locally. I know that Brown's Paint used to carry it, but they're no longer in business. Many of the products advertised as waterproofing don't really work very well, according to the test work done at the University of Texas Forest Service. So I am not as current as I would like to be. I haven't seen the particular article that you have in mind.
Okay. As a general rule, do you prefer water-based or oil-based treatments?
Probably water-based.
Well, then I appreciate your help. Thanks. Goodbye.
Okay.
Okay, very good. We'll go on here. Next person is also Urbana, line one. Hello.
Yeah, now I want to take you back to the bathroom. It seems like all of these calls have one thing in common in that they all involve water in some fashion. What I would like to know about is the plumbing fixtures, and in particular the shower escutcheons. I recently put in some shower valves, and we redid both bathrooms in the house. And these shower valves are these great big things, 5 inches in diameter, which have holes to match in the wall. And the manufacturer simply says to put the escutcheons up against the tile or the surface of the wall and not worry about it. And I have, it's hard for me to not to think that the water can get back behind those things and back into the wall and do some damage. Now, in setting this up, we've used Duroc underneath the tiles, but there still are the studs back there that could get wet and, if not rot, at least swell and perhaps crack some grout. So I'm wondering if these escutcheons should be caulked around and if we should be taking special efforts for that. Not only the escutcheons, but also we've got deck-mounted faucets on the bathtub, and whether those should be caulked around to make sure that the water doesn't get back.
Well, rather than caulking around them, you usually set them in plumber's putty.
Oh, I see, which is a little bit easier to remove, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, and what about the shower escutcheons, too? That's a little hard to put plumber's putty there because those things are about 7 inches in diameter, and you're just talking about a thin edge that makes contact with the wall.
That's true, and you can do either one. You can use a non-mildewing silicone caulk to seal around it, or, again, you can set that edge in plumber's putty and then wipe off the squeeze out.
Okay. Okay, but you think there should be something there. They shouldn't. The escutcheons come with a gasket of some sort. There's a little foam gasket on it, but I'm not sure how much I would trust it.
Well, I'm not sure either. I probably would use either the caulk or the plumber's putty.
Okay, All right, great. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. Next up is our line number four, Terre Haute, Indiana. Hello.
Hello. I have a problem with my driveway. It's concrete, and the people, I live on a private road, I think they've cleaned it with in the winter with rock salt, and I'm getting some chipping, the tops of the concrete sort of flaking off. Is there any way to seal that?
Well, do you want to seal it or resurface it?
Well, I'd rather not resurface it. It's not really too bad. What kind of resurface could I do?
Well, there are some epoxy-based resurfacing materials such as Abocrete and things like this that can be troweled on that will resurface and hold pretty well. The other alternative is to use one of the concrete sealers, or actually you can do what the highway department does, and that is they use about one part of linseed oil to four or five parts of kerosene and put it on there, and that soaks in and the oil sets up on the surface and provides a water repellent surface.
Okay, what's the ratio of linseed to kerosene?
Probably one part of linseed to about four parts kerosene.
Okay. And what if I put the, say, epoxy on, then could I seal it after that? Would that
shouldn't be necessary.
It would not be necessary?
No.
I was thinking about next year, though, in terms of more drips on it, though.
Yeah. No, the epoxy is very chemical and salt resistant.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right.
I enjoy always your programs.
Very good. Thank you. Let's go to northwestern suburbs of Chicago here, line number three. Hello.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you about a problem that we have with plumbing. We never had any sewer problem before, but then we had a heavy rain and the basement flooded with some clear water, but there was also some black stuff that came up from the drain.
Mm-hmm.
So we cleaned it, you know, we did it with the water hose of draining it, pumping it out, and then a plumber came over and rotted it, and didn't took him but a couple minutes, you know, but I don't remember how much later. We had the same thing happen, and he came over, and he didn't say that what he suggested I wasn't happy with. So I wanted to see what your impression is since the sewer backed up again after he had rotted it.
Well, it's quite
gas smells in the. In the bathroom now.
Mm-hmm. It's quite possible that the sewer capacity is being overloaded, and this happens.
None of the other neighbors had it.
It's possible that you have some roots or something or other clogging yours. The fact that they rotted it once doesn't mean that they got everything out that they should have gotten. Mm-hmm. Yes, it went down. I also am suspicious that you may have some downspouts or something that are draining into that tile.
That's not true.
They are going out onto the surface.
Right.
Okay. The other thing that you can do is put in a backwater valve, which basically you would have to probably cut into the floor, install it in the drain line so that it will allow flow only in one direction.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can take the plate off the top of the drain.
The what?
And, well, there should be some kind of a grill or plate or whatever over the drain, and see if you can screw in a short standpipe. This would mean that the water would have to back up to a greater depth before it could overflow.
Short standpipe. When he came the second time, he did suggest extensive things like a water backup valve, and I don't know what else. But what happened is it so happened that somebody flushed a toilet from upstairs, and there's a drain in the basement, but there's also a drain right outside in the concrete stairwell, and there's another drain there, and there was a sound coming from it when someone flushed the toilet. And does that have any special indication?
That would mean that that drain was hooked to the sanitary sewer line, which it undoubtedly shouldn't be.
Well, we tried it today, and it didn't do it.
So, well, generally speaking, Chicago area has some different sewer systems whereby they have a lot of sanitary and storm sewer combinations.
I'm in the suburbs.
Okay, well, I don't know what your particular suburb has.
Uh-huh.
It could be either way. Okay. And generally speaking, the sewer system can get overloaded in case of rain. We have a lot of older sewer systems that have leaks in them so that surface water gets into the sewer system and causes backups. Probably the backflow valve is the best solution at this point. Now, I don't know whether your outdoor drain is hooked to that sanitary sewer or not.
I think I just need to get a better quality plumber than what I have, what I think.
Well, the problem is that, like me, plumbers don't have X-ray vision. We have no idea how things are connected underneath the floor, and it would help if we knew. We could come up with much better solutions.
Would the builder's plans include anything like that or not?
They might. Mm-hmm. They might. I doubt it, but it's always possible.
One small other question.
Mm-hmm.
I need to get something for, the leaves on the gutters to cover them. Is mm-hmm. there anything that's inexpensive so that the leaves don't go into the gutters?
The ones that work aren't inexpensive, unfortunately.
Yeah.
The little screens that you put over the top are fairly worthless. There are some that have a sheet metal that slide under the edge of the shingles, go out completely over the gutter, and
sense.
Then curl around so that it works like a pitcher with a bad spout, and the surface tension of the water takes it back into the front of the gutter rather than the back. And
I don't understand what you mean by the front of the gutter.
Well, the edge furthest away from the roof. See, this metal plate covers the entire top of the gutter, but it has a little curl to the front edge such that the water clings to it and comes back into the front of the gutter rather than at the back where it would drip off the shingles.
Would you get that at a hardware store?
Hardware stores, perhaps built, probably one of the home stores.
Yes.
Is more likely. The one that I know of that works best, unfortunately, is sold only through dealers, and I think it's about $3 a foot, which is ridiculous. But there are some out there that are roughly $1 a foot that you can put on yourself, that work pretty well.
Okay. It's not a special brand name.
I don't have brand name in front of me. I have
go to a home store,
home center store, you know, Home Depot or Lowe's or someplace like that.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
We're about midway through this part of Focus 580. We're talking with Hank Spies. This is our monthly show on home maintenance, and we'll talk some more with Hank in just a second. In fact, we have a caller we will get right to. But we want to make a little space here for our station manager, Dan Simeone, who has stopped in. And I know that he is here to remind folks that we are getting perilously close to the end of our fiscal year. And that's important because at that point, on the 30th of June, we want to make sure that we have in the bank all of the money that we're going to spend on programs next year. And we're real close, but we still are about 70. Well, I think last time I saw the figure was about $75,000 short.
$74,900. So we're getting there. The glass is certainly well more than half full, and I want to thank everyone that's helped us raise more than $625,000 in listener support already this year. But the next 5 days are very, very important. It's critical that we meet this goal because those are the dollars we'll use to pay for programs next year. And this fundraising process is sort of a year-long marathon, and we're sort of in the final mile here, and we want to finish up on a positive note. We had a couple of very successful fundraising periods already this year, but there's still work to be done. So if you've never contributed before, and programs like this, like the one you're listening to this morning with Hank, are important to you, if you value them, this is one way of showing that to the station by pledging, why not, a basic membership of $40 to WILL. You can do that by calling us at 217-333-0850. You can also still mail us a check to the Friends of WILL Radio, 300 North Goodwin, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. Or you can even contribute on our website, our secure site at will.uiuc.edu, and you can contribute by credit card there. Remember that more than 40% of the money that we use to produce these programs comes directly from listeners. And thank you very much for your help.
Okay, thanks, Dan. This is Focus 580, our telephone talk program, and this morning we're doing our monthly show on home maintenance. We usually do this in the 10 o'clock hour, just a little change of schedule in that respect, but otherwise the same sort of thing. Hank Spies is our guest from the Spies Home Inspection Service, and if you have some kind of question about some problem around the house, the kinds of things we talked about so far, or could be something different, give us a call. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Next two people here in Urbana. First, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about footings. I'm going to be putting up a pool-type building, probably 16 by 24.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to put a cement wall up to the base of the where the building's the wall starts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, how deep do I need to go?
Well, the footing needs to go in this area about 32 inches deep. Now, it does not mean that that wall has to be low that deep. You can put down piers for your poles that down to that depth, but you could perhaps run your wall only 12 inches below ground, which keeps rodents from burrowing under it and things like that.
Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted it for.
Yeah.
So I should go, say, 32 to maybe 36 inches deep where the pole is and pour cement there.
Right.
Would it be a good idea to pour cement around the post?
You can do that, but don't bring it up more than at least 6 inches below the ground. We don't want to cause that. And, of course, you're using pressure-treated posts.
Yes.
But I wouldn't bring the concrete for the posts up closer than 6 inches to the top. But as I say, you can just dig a trench there and get your rodent barrier in.
Mm-hmm.
Since that is not really a foundation, it's merely a curtain wall, so because your structure is supported on the posts.
If I use cement blocks, I should put a poured cement footing under those cement blocks, right?
It would be better if you did, yes. And that probably, just to prevent frost heave, ought to have some rebar in it, say two rows of half-inch steel rebar in the footing.
Sounds smart. How wide should the
Well, if you're going block, it's going to be 8 inches. If you were going poured concrete, I'd say 6.
Okay. What I was trying to think of was the pilings that the post sits on. How wide should those be?
Generally speaking, the posts go in, you'll dig your hole and bell the bottom a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and get something probably about 10 to 12 inches in diameter at the bottom.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you very much.
All okay. Right, very good. And on to line two. This is also Urbana. Hello.
Yes, good morning. I also have a concrete question. I have a house that was just constructed. We moved in late December. The exterior concrete was poured fairly late in November. It had gotten cold quite early. And I see lots of defects. And I'm really wondering, what should I expect as normal and what should I complain about as...
Well, what kind of defects do you have?
Well, there are a lot of places, maybe 1,000, where there are chips out of the top and the contractor has come back and, you know, smooth the little stuff in there, although I'm not sure that will last. There's a semicircular driveway, and there's one place where it's cracked all the way across. There's a exterior patio in the back. There's another place where it has cracked all the way across, not where there are any expansion joints or anything, just in the flat concrete. And finally, there is no expansion joint where the patio meets the house, and I guess I would have thought that there should be an expansion joint there.
Indeed, there should be. The patio should never be allowed to bond to the house foundation. I suspect the crack in your patio is, what, about 4 feet out from the house?
Well, it runs from the house to the outer edge of the patio.
Okay. Usually this is because the patio is poured on backfill, which hadn't completely settled yet. Mm-hmm. And part of this is our own impatience. Years ago, grandfather wouldn't consider pouring concrete until the house had been built for a year.
Yes.
That gave it time to settle and so on. And unfortunately, we have great difficulty convincing buyers to wait that long these days. So the soil hasn't settled, and you will get some cracking. There should be some expansion joints that will allow the cracks to appear in a straight line.
And there are expansion joints, and there are cracks down all of those.
Okay.
This is one that is not in an expansion joint.
Okay. Well, generally speaking, you can't pour a piece of concrete more than 16 feet square without an expansion joint and not get a crack. Mm-hmm. So now, as far as the surface is concerned, if we have lots of little things where it seems to be shelling on the surface, that usually means that the concrete was too wet when it was poured and then overcrawled.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the common cause of that type of surface shelling.
Will later filling in those places last, or will that just pop out in a year or so anyway?
Depends on what you fill them with.
Mm-hmm.
A latex or epoxy concrete has a pretty good chance of staying. Epoxy, definitely so. Standard concrete, no way.
Mm-hmm. And I guess finally, are these all acts of God or nature, and I should just cry in my beer, or do I have a complaint against my contractor?
I think you may have a complaint in some of these things, at least.
Okay.
Certainly the lack of the expansion joint between the house and the patio. Similarly, we run into problems where the contractor does not put an expansion joint between the garage floor and the foundation wall. And that is essential to prevent cracking of the floor.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Right, thank you. Next is Effingham, line 4. Hello.
I was wondering what I could put on to seal my patio to protect it over time.
Well, there are a number of concrete sealers on the market, and all of them are better than nothing. As they say, the highway department uses a mixture of linseed oil and kerosene. I won't say that that's necessarily the best looking, but it certainly is economical, seems to work fairly well.
I had one other question regarding concrete. I've got an old garage pad that's cracked up. What can I do to seal those cracks to prevent it from getting worse?
Again, if there is not a joint between the floor and the wall, you're going to have a hard time holding anything.
Well, actually, there is no garage there anymore.
Oh, okay.
Just the concrete pad.
Mm-hmm. You can buy at most of the home stores a concrete crack filler. It usually comes in a gallon jug with a narrow spout on it, so you can pour in the cracks, and it will set and seal those cracks. And that's about the best you can do at this point without breaking it up and repouring it.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, very good. Back here to Champagne. This is line 1. Hello.
Hello, there are two of us here. We have a 110-year-old house with a basement with a poured concrete floor and concrete block walls of a dimension that isn't really made much anymore. And we have a soil expansion and contraction problem with our east and west side walls. The east side is bowed in a few inches. The west side is not only bowed in but sheared off on the bottom course. Now, we've had two contractors come in. One wants to just do cosmetic repairs on the west side and reinforce both sides with channel iron. The other one wants to reinforce the east side, if he can get into them, with rebar and pouring in concrete cores, and he wants to support the house on the west side with temporary I-beams and jacks and rebuild the rest wall with and put in footings if it needs it. And, of course, there is some cost difference.
I would suspect a substantial cost difference.
It amounts to, it's a little bit rough because the second contractor did not include the temporary removal of the heating ducts, which has to be done in both cases. It amounts to about anywhere from $2,000 to $3,000.
Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, the channel iron reinforcement seems to work pretty well. Yes, it shows on the inside. Yes, it would be better to support the house and completely rebuild the wall with reinforcing in it. On a $125,000 house, is it worth it? Probably not. As long as they will do they have to cut through the floor to restrain the ends of the channel irons, hook them into the floor framing above. And most of the instances that we have seen where that has been done have worked quite well. Now, this isn't going to straighten the wall.
Mm-hmm.
It all depends on how much do you value the fact that the wall is straight.
A part of it is the one wall that is shearing, it is actually moved like an inch to an inch and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So because the block has shifted that far, is it enough to still just support it, or are you starting to get a weakness there because the blocks have already shifted so far in that one section?
Well, I'm assuming that you have some reasonable thickness concrete floor. If your concrete floor is only an inch or so thick, then no, it's not adequate. If it is a normal 3 or 4 inch concrete slab down there so that they can stick the ends, cut holes in it, stick the ends of the steel down through, and cement them in place, I think you've got enough there to hold it.
Okay. Well, we really don't know the problem.
Well, you probably could take a masonry bit and drill a hole close to that wall and see what you get.
Mm-hmm. Does this have would either one have an effect eventually on resale or inspection when we want to sell a place? Would an inspector give a failing grade to the house or something?
No. Generally speaking, I can only speak of what I would do, but I would indicate that it had been reinforced, and unless there was some indication of movement since it had been reinforced, I would consider it adequate.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Very good. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Hank Spies, and he is here with us on this program every month, always on a Monday, usually in the 10 o'clock hour. We just changed things around a little bit here this time around, but it's the same program. So if you have questions about home maintenance issues, you can call us here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Our next caller in line is in Charleston, line three. Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
I have a house with 5/8-inch pressed board siding, kind of a drab or olive green color. And the problem is the lip on the boards is probably, as they overlap each other, is probably maybe 3/8 inch deep. And spiders and millers, et cetera, get under that lip and then defecate on the house. They've got these white drippings all over a greenhouse. My question is, how do I remove this? Is there an easy way to do it? A power spray with a particular wash? Or am I going to do this by hand, or how do I do it without?
I would probably try and do it just with garden hose, not with a high pressure sprayer.
I tried the garden hose and it doesn't do it.
Doesn't take anything off.
I need something I can rub it down with or whatever.
Okay, try a brush, long handled brush with about one part of household bleach to three parts of water.
Okay. There's no washing by a hardware store or something like that that will.
Well, it probably won't work any better.
Right. Okay.
There are some, but I would use a 1:1 to 4 chlorine bleach solution.
Okay.
The main thing that I'm trying to avoid here is the pressure washer will tend to blow water into the bottom edge of these siding boards. And once you get water soaking into the bottom edge, you're in big trouble.
That's good. I had not thought of that. Okay. Appreciate it very much.
All right. Very good. To line two in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Hank, I live in a 1920s era stucco house. And a lot of the stucco around, the stucco just goes down to the foundation wall. And that bottom edge of the stucco has a lot of cracking. When you get away from the bottom edge up on the main portion of the wall, it seems to be sound. And I'm wondering if that cracking along the bottom edge is due to, you know, the joist that runs around the top of the foundation wall, the rim joist. Is that a point where that stucco gets stressed by differential movement and just they should never have put stucco down in that area?
Well, it probably should have terminated better, and I'm suspecting that part of it is that wood is moving with changes in moisture.
Uh-huh.
And,
but as I look around town at a lot of the old stucco houses, that seems to be the standard way that they did it in those days.
Yes, it was.
Okay.
It was.
And the reason I bring that up is I was wondering, you know, I'd like to somehow fix it, make it, correct it for the long term, and not do something that wouldn't be in keeping with the original style of the house.
Well, I think you're going to have to take all the cracked stucco off. You're going to have to slip a flashing in behind it, and then your wire reinforcement, and then re-stucco over it, and bring it down on top of a piece of flashing.
So the flashing would extend up behind the stucco and come out at the bottom edge?
Right.
Oh, okay. How far up would that?
I don't know. I'd probably try and get it up to 3 or 4 inches above grade.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you. And we have another Champaign person here, line one. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
In a Lustron house, the window frames are aluminum, and the glass is mounted in some kind of gaskets that are made of, I don't know, rubber or neoprene. They're some sort of black material.
Mm-hmm.
And at the corners, the gaskets have shrunk away on all four corners of almost all the panes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, A, what sort of caulk or whatever should be used to try to fill those spaces, and what sort of preparation should be made before doing that?
Well, you want to clean it as much as possible, get all the dirt and such out. And this is one of those instances where a silicone caulk would work very well.
Okay.
Silicones don't work well on wood, but when it comes to glass and aluminum, they do quite nicely.
Okay. Do you have any idea what the black material might be?
It was a rubber compound. I'm not sure whether it was neoprene, but considering the time that they were built, I would think it's probably basically rubber.
Okay, and the silicone will stick to that pretty well.
Yeah.
Okay, and the cleaning, should that just be done with soap and water and a toothbrush or something?
Probably would be, and then be sure to let it dry thoroughly.
Okay, and a separate question. Driveway, concrete driveway that was installed about 15 years ago, and the surface is still in pretty good shape. And so the question is, does it make any sense to do any surface treatment to it now? And if so, would some cans of Thompson's Water Seal that I've had for years and years be something to try to use?
I probably wouldn't.
Would not? Okay.
No. You can put on something, but I would want something that was relatively new, and Thompson's Water Seal was never very good to begin with.
Oh, it wasn't. Okay. Is there anything, what is the best use for some Thompson's Water Seal that's on hand? Is there anything to do other than try to find a hazardous waste collection to give it to?
Well, if you've got a wood deck, you can try and use it, but it won't last more than a year.
I see. Okay. And what then would you recommend to use on the driveway? With that, you talked a little while ago about linseed oil and kerosene.
Yeah. And that works fairly well for most purposes. I say that's what the highway department uses on the interstate.
Okay. And as I said, the surface is in pretty good shape, even though it's been down for more than 15 years. Does it really make sense to do anything?
I would be very tempted to ignore it.
You would?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Can I ask, are you bringing a younger colleague along in your business?
My son is doing most of the inspections these days.
Oh, he is? Good. Okay. Because I've been thinking that one of these days, Hank Spees is going to do whatever his version of retiring to Florida is, and there's going to be a huge hole in the local scene.
Well, I'm about 70, and my wife doesn't like to see me walk roofs anymore. And so my son is taking over the inspection business, yes.
I see. Okay. Thanks very much.
All right, thanks. And what, you know, mom is okay with watching her son walk the roof, or was she just...
Yeah.
She is okay with
She's
it.
She's okay
all right.
with
good.
Watching son walk
the roof. All right, so it's okay if the son walks the roof. All right, very good. If somebody has a question, they can call real quick. We'll get them in. Otherwise, we have a minute or two left. I'm just curious. This question just occurred to me because I had the previous caller ask the question about stucco. What is stucco? What is it made of?
Concrete.
So that's essentially really what cement, it is. Really, it's a
cement-based product. Yes. Hmm. And stucco doesn't seem to last nearly as well here as it does in some other parts of the country. Some of the best stucco I know of is in Minneapolis area, but there they don't have as many freeze-thaw cycles. It gets cold and stays cold, and the freeze-thaw cycles here make it a little more difficult.
Yeah, okay. I think we'll get one more here in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hi. I have an odd problem with the ductwork in my basement that serves my furnace and my air conditioner. Even when they are turned off, I get a very, very loud vibration once in a while, and it sounds almost like an airplane going over. It's so loud. And I just don't know what the source could possibly be because, as I say, everything is turned off.
Well, offhand, I don't know either.
It doesn't last very long, maybe a minute or two.
Mm-hmm.
And then it slowly fades away by itself.
It isn't associated with any plumbing or water use, is it?
Not that I'm aware of, no. And I've been in this house for 3 years, and it hasn't done this until about the last couple months or so. And when I've been able to get down to the basement, when the vibration is going on, I notice if I press on the ductwork or on the furnace, there is some effect on the vibration, but it doesn't go away.
Mm-hmm.
But what would actually cause it to begin with?
Well, I'm wondering if your furnace fan might be out of balance and was causing a vibration. And very often the furnace fan will continue to run after the burner is shut off, and it may even restart after the burner is shut off if it doesn't cool the furnace down enough.
Hmm. Well, I haven't had the furnace on for a long time, though.
Okay.
Or the air conditioner.
No, I have no idea what mechanical device may be causing it to vibrate.
I thought there might be some odd airlock or resonance or something that was caused in the ductwork by a change of temperature or something. But
I wouldn't think so. That's usually a one-time plunk, so-called oil can effect.
Uh-huh.
But it almost says that there's got to be some mechanical source of vibration.
Also sort of a very loud hum that goes along with it, but then, as I say, after a minute or two, it all slowly fades away, and it just might come back later.
Mm-hmm.
For no apparent reason. At first I thought perhaps the chimney was vibrating in the wind because I have just one of those little cheap metal chimneys that stick up, but it does this even if there's no wind, and I don't think that's the problem.
Nope, afraid I can't diagnose that with my long distance.
Do you think that if I turn off the furnace, the electrical switch that's up near the floor, the one that stops the furnace from buzzing, you know,
mm-hmm.
most furnaces buzz all the time, if I flip that switch...
Furnaces shouldn't buzz all the time.
Well, my furnace buzzes all the time.
I'm wondering if you have a bad transformer on the low voltage for the thermostat.
Well, it isn't supposed to buzz all the time?
No.
Oh. Mine always has, and I've been here 3 years. I didn't know that.
Maybe a service call is in order here.
It might well be, yes.
I'll try it and see if that will kill it.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Mm-hmm. There we got to go for this time around with the promise that Hank will be back again next month and probably in the 10 o'clock hour. Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. Thank you very much.
Thank you.